Today, Edwin's Monday Property Rant, Episode 2. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined again by Edwin Almeida, our property insider. Hi, Edwin.
G'day, Martin. How are you going?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Good, mate. Good. I'm sporting the Elvis Presley hairstyle today. I was going to go with the Seagull look, but Tarek Seagull Brooker beat me to it.
Yes, it's very funny. It's funny that you got more comments about your hair than almost anything else last week. That was very...
shit happens and things. That's very important to a lot of people. Once you go past 50, you got to watch the hairdo. You got to make sure you keep it all intact. Otherwise we end up with Kojak.
Yeah. Well, look. I got mine done as well, so I thought I'd dress for the occasion.
Hopefully we don't go into another lockdown, and then what will we do without a hairdresser? But then again, I don't go to a hairdresser anyway.
No, I don't either. That's another story. Now, there's a few things we need to talk about today, and we're going to talk about some fake news from Domain. We're going to talk about Shane Oliver and some of his Twitter to and fro's, and we're going to talk about Christopher Joy and his recent AFR article claiming that the market is bubbly, and I guess also just an update from you in terms of what's out there in terms of what's happening with the market. So there we are.
It's been a surprising weekend. There's a lot happening. I actually got out of Twitter purgatory. Square Meter Research got me back online. They've unblocked me. So Louis unblocked me. Thanks, champ. I'm out of Twitter purgatory with him. Must have been something I said, I must have said something good. But I'm still sticking to the fact that agents do not post listings, or the majority of listings did not come up on Friday, regardless.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it is very interesting. I mean, before we get into our key ones, I've been looking at the information from the Valuer General, right? So they publish ultimately all of the sold transactions, right? And it's very interesting if you compare the sold transactions that actually are from the official source. Now, obviously, it takes a couple of months. With all the portals, there's a massive mismatch.
It's incredible what happens out there, and yourself, and also Lindsay David has been on this for years. Like myself, we've been on it for years because we know how it works. But again, I say over and over again, yet they've got such rich data, and as real estate agents, we hand them information that should be freely available to the general public in order to know and be able to navigate through the turmoil and the rapid falls that are about to hit people, square in the face. It's incredible. And yet they apologize about not quoting or misquoting somebody. I mean, hold the world together. Yeah, it's going to fall apart. Tickle and giggle article out there on fluffy pillows actually comes out. The editor comes out with an apology saying that property reporter misquoted or made up some quotes. I mean, what about the figures that they misquote and they make up reports on? What about them? When are we going to get an apology on that, Martin? When are we going to get an apology on the fact that it's us, the real estate industry, that built those bloody portals in the first place, that give them the information for free, they charge us an arm and a leg to advertise listings online, and yet they hold back and make up shit as they go? When are we going to get an apology for that?
Yeah, and just to contextualise it, Domain came out with an announcement today. They apologised for essentially one of their journalists telling porkies in articles, and that journalist is no longer with Domain, to which my reaction was, well, so they're claiming it's one bad apple And actually, you know, there is a broader set of issues with regard to the information flows and specifically the stories that come out day after day. Oh, it's always the story about somebody who's won, you know, made masses out of this or bought well above the reserve, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, hang on, you know, this is not telling the full story with regard to property. So we need a different approach, I think, from very significant sources, all of the portals and all of the people who are writing the articles, because it's spin, 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 isn't it?
Well, it is, Martin. And look, I've gone toe to toe with Doc Wilson on 2UE, on 2GB, and also online and on LinkedIn, on other areas with regard to vacancy rates. For many years, you know, his promotion of the plan apartments, his promotion of, you know, we're running out of land and this and that. And when you check as to where they do their little seminars after they get out of the offices from Domain and from these portals, when they go and do the seminars and who they write articles for and on behalf of, I'm sure they're getting backenders, reusable plastic bags and brown paper bags underneath the table, whatever they do, yeah. Allegedly,
we don't know exactly. For sure. But there is clearly an alignment of interests between the real estate sector and the information that's peddled on the portals and on the journalism surrounding the portals, and of course it flows into the mainstream media, right? So there is a series of joining the dots, and it's clearly all about saying property is always up, not down. There's always opportunity, not risk, and people are just being cajoled to come in and buy.
Yeah, and this, that's the incredible thing, but yet they say it with such authority, and the mainstream media pick all that BS up and take it on board and they run with it. It's not obviously the truth doesn't get any ticks. But then again, I was starting to think, and I posted a tweet out a week or so ago. I just went through the Domain Twitter feed on Twitter. We follow each other on Domain. Maybe for another week or so, maybe when somebody there from head office watches this video, maybe they'll stop following me. But I look at the likes and the engagement, the audience engagement. They've got over 110, I think, over 111,000 followers on there, and there's very little engagement. This is what I say. They're falling out. So what's the point even in apologising for something that people probably haven't even read in the first place? Now, the only reason why I read it is because I read those articles, Domain articles on Fridays for my tickle and giggle Friday evening, tequila and nachos.
Well, I have a theory that 100,000 is mostly real estate agents, but I could be wrong.
Look, well, that, but there's no engagement at all. There's no engagement. You look at my mate Doc Wilson's engagement. You look at some of the stuff that they say. The only one that does some, have something to say from time to time, and it's relevant, has been both Louis Christopher as well as Shane Oliver. But even Shane Oliver on his Twitter feed, they rely heavily, these economists for AMP, for the CBA, for Westpac, for the ANZ, whoever it is, they rely so heavily on the data both from Domain, which is the auction clearance rates, and CoreLogic, which, as you know, best case scenario, as far as I'm concerned, they're about 62 days in the rears anyway with their data. But yet they rely so heavily on these on this data that is skewed, and we don't know, all the smoke and mirror stuff that goes into the information that they put out. It's really time for a change, and it's really it's a time for people, to the general public, people in the industry like myself. We have been calling for better information, better data, to be able to pass on to our clients effectively, so that we can be more effective, so that we can put things out. But when we get bombarded by by the mainstream and the reliance on it. I mean, so you just got to take it as it comes. Take each blow by blow. Take the blows as they come.
Mm. Okay. So what's happening in Sydney at the moment then, from your experience over the last few days?
Look, it's again the same sentiment hasn't changed. There's still a lot of people attending auctions and attending open for inspections, and you have to basically get in there early, at the inspections, because there are some properties that are well presented, as I've said all along. There are in the very, there are some suburbs that seem to have found a temporary flaw with regard to prices, and people are jumping in. And people will always buy when the market goes down, they'll buy when the market goes up. So, you know, and you see these people, but yet the fanfare, the excitement, the pizzazz, you can see it in the agents' faces, you can see in the auctioneers, verbatim, the stuff that they say on the day, or the way they try to, motivate the audience. But yet, most of the time, what myself and my associates are seeing, Martin, is that the majority, a good 80, 90%, 95% of the people that attend the auctions are just people from the neighbourhood, more than likely, and I know because they're comparing their properties to what's being sold. One particular one in Willoughby that we attended with a client of ours, and poor little old lady, a few doors down, just had her hands in her face, after the auctions. Oh my God, it's so cheap, basically thinking, if that got passed in at 2.3, what did the agents in the local area tell her that it was worth? Probably 2.8, 2.9. But these are the people that are going to suffer the most, the people that are making a life change because they're fully retired and they can't maintain these big properties anymore.
Mm. Right. And the listings numbers are going up just a little, aren't they now?
Yeah, Tad, they are. We've started a little bit stronger this week with the Monday figures. They did drop, or they stabilised for a little bit for the last 3 weeks. But talking to our colleagues in the industry and talking to, they're very busy with market appraisals. But at the same time, when you dig a little bit deeper, you find out that a lot of them are also busy organising tradespeople. And the other thing also is, Martin, that a lot of them are also having to accommodate tenants. And that's been rather difficult, to say the least. It's difficult when things are normal, let alone when you're going through a pandemic and you've got to social distance and organise things properly, both with the tradespeople as well as with the tenants, and then the open for inspection time. So things are taking a little bit longer, but I'm still confident that the numbers will tick up. As I said, they've started a little bit higher than what they have in the last 3 weeks. But then again, we didn't see a retraction in numbers in winter anyway. So it's just going to be lumping more listings, more new listings, particularly the freestanding homes in the suburbs, which is going to be eye-watering, I'd say, in the next few weeks.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's interesting. I did some deep dive work on Redfern, and it's quite interesting watching what's going on there. So the prices are definitely beginning to deaccelerate there. But the most striking thing was just the vacancy rates. So the number of rental accommodation that is actually vacant, and therefore rents are falling quite fast, and that's putting tremendous pressure on some property investors. So my theory is that we're going to see more property investors really questioning whether, in fact, property investment is worth the candle at the moment, because, with no capital appreciation, with rentals effectively now beginning to slide, there's an argument for saying you should get out quick.
Well, Redfern, an area where predominantly was occupied, the rentals, the investment properties were occupied by students. That's getting smashed. Redfern, Camperdown, and all the surrounding areas around there. So, of course, you're going to have that massive drop. But just going back a step with regards to that, I got a phone call from somebody that's in the relationship with a senior manager in CBA, Martin, and they were pissed off at you for that report that you put out in Redfern, because they themselves have an investment property. I know he's probably watching this video, because he does follow you. So he wants answers. He's going to come at you. He called me and said, do you have Martin's address? So I think I'm going to have to go down and maybe give you a few tips on Boxing Man.
Well, I'm just reporting the data. I mean, you know, there's nothing in any of the material that I show that isn't available for anyone to go look at, and that included, of course, all of the recent transactions. So, you know, there you go. The story is the story, Edwin. The data is the data. That's why a lot of people don't want the data to get out, right? But the fact is, you can't hold up the dam of data forever.
No, look, and we get that. You get the people on Twitter. You get the people on the that make comments on YouTube and everything else. So, look, you just take it. As I say, look, we're reporting one thing. We see one thing. I mean, we're looking at things. When it gets to the nuts and bolts, it's all very much subjective. Anyway, we're looking at it through our own eyes, and we make our own assessments, and hence the reason why this we say over and over again: this isn't financial advice. This isn't advice. We're not advising you to do something. We're just giving you passing on information. There are others in the mainstream, just because they write for the AFR. And write articles that the property market's going to, turn up another 10-20% in the forthcoming years. Well, then again, but yet they've got some sort of authority on that. Well, if you want to listen to that, by all means, go out and invest in property, but not whilst you and I are seeing at face value at the hardcore data that's showing that the trend is going south, and it's going to go south a lot quicker than what a lot of people expect.
Well, and that takes us to Christopher Joy's article in the AFR, right, which, he published over the weekend, and basically he's saying, well, there might be a very slight fall, but actually the property now is on the turn, and he's still actually thinking that there will be significant rises ahead.
Yeah, well, look, at the same time that article came out, I think Canada put out an article with regards to dating and how you can safely date. If people are going on Tinder and all those sorts of dating websites, and they said that, look, as long as you wear a mask, casual sex is okay, but make sure you wear a mask. So when you get that sort of proposition over in Canada, you're going to say, well, look, the science says it's okay, so it must be okay. So when going back to Chris Joy's article on the AFR, if CoreLogic says that property prices have stabilised, that's the science that they use, and the auction clearance rates are actually reflecting a higher percentage rate, so everything must be okay. I mean, I liken this sort of BS to reading all that, taking all that advice, and the poor bastard that bought into Opal Tower or into Mascot Tower off the plan, goes back to the spruikers that told him the off the plan apartments in Opal or Mascot, and says, mate, I read this article. The science says it's okay. Can you sell me another one in the next high rise development? Preferably, I would like one in Parramatta. Near the beach where Mr. Real Estate McGrath says that they're going to build the beach. I want it there. Find it for me, because the science says it's okay. So if it's okay to have sex and not get COVID, as long as you wear a mask, casual sex, that's the science. Well, the other science here in buying property off the plan must be okay too, because, AFR says so. That's the science.
I have to say, I didn't think we were going to be talking about casual sex on our show tonight, but there you go. But look, the point about Christopher Joy's article is that he actually did put some caveats around what he said. He said, look, there are lots of threats to the outlook, and he actually went through quite a few, right? In fact, what we'll do is we'll put up that part of his quote, because I think it's quite interesting that he's still saying, well, this is what I think, but there's also some risk. And the other point is his main argument is still that, well, interest rates are significantly lower than they were, which makes property more affordable. But, of course, we've got such a plethora of things going on with, for example, the banks now starting to have conversations with people about those mortgage repayment holidays, which are now ending. We know that in Victoria, the auction clearance rates are close to zero because there's almost no transactions happening at the moment, and that will be locked down for a further period. We know that the property investor sector is really very sick at the moment because many people are trying to work out whether they should sell or not. And whilst there are some first-time buyers who are still being cajoled to come into the market, I call that a bribe, nevertheless, the number's quite low. And of course, no international investors are coming in. So whichever way you look at it, it's tough to argue for very significant rises from this point unless we get a massive turnaround in the economy. Now, Westpac today came out and actually came in with a much more bullish forecast for growth, way above where the Reserve Bank is sitting currently. So I guess you could argue that maybe there are some economists out there who are wanting to turn the ship around by talking it up. But I think the real data that you and I see suggests that there's going to be more trouble ahead. And by the way, if you take auction clearance rates, I'll go with Lou Christopher any day.
Yeah, exactly. Look, that's something there. But going back to Joyce's article, I mean, the heading reads, why now may be a good time to invest in property. I mean, talk about you know, baiting. Talk about BS, talk about you know, smoke and mirrors. Then the paragraph or the sentence right after the heading, the subheading, should be enough for anybody with some common sense to throw this article, you know, throw it in the bin. And then it says, and it reads, you know, the RBA and the banks are working together to get cheap money to businesses, families, and state governments to galvanize the recovery. Okay, I know what he's trying to say is that is basing this premise on the fact that people are still going to have jobs. That one of the main discussions that you had with Tarek Seagull, Tarek Seagull Brooker, you know, was with regard to, you know, to the fact that a lot of this money isn't getting to the SMEs. And you and I spoke about this even before COVID, even before the bushfire crisis. We were speaking about this last year, Martin, and that was with regard to the SMEs were already in a lot of pain. And predominantly we were talking about the specific sectors, which were the hospitality, as well as my industry, the real estate industry, how they were already living on credit cards. So this, you know, how this recovery is going to be governed by throwing cheap money at it, I don't, you know, like Tarek says, it's the people that are taking advantage of this, or the businesses that are taking advantage of this, are not the SMEs, because it's too much red tape for the SMEs. You know, all the BS that you got to go through in order to get a handout, and now that the JobKeeper is going to be amended, and they're going to start cutting to certain levels. Well, then businesses, guess what? Businesses are just simply my discussions with liquidators and the like and accountants is that now the SMEs are now taking greater steps or quicker steps to basically going to VA because they've had their little holiday period. They've tried to sell off as much as they can of the inventory. They've got no more money to buy new inventory, and there's no new inventory coming. There's no, you know, shops are running out of stuff because there's no real imports coming in from China anyway. So yeah, we're going to be walking into a mess. And just throwing money at it is really not the end. Of this, there's a lot more at play. But when these so-called economists or reporters and people that hold, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on behalf of other investors, you know, to put all their eggs in the one basket in the recovery of property over and over again, it's just suicidal.
Well, I agree with that, and it's also I think worth reflecting that the SME sector, you know, was under the gun before COVID hit, right, and continues to be under severe pressure. And it's interesting that the government is now, according to the AFR, considering extending the you can go on trading without, basically making a profit. In other words, you can trade insolvent for longer. But all that is doing is just pushing out the inevitable point when a business essentially has to realize the fact that it can no longer trade effectively. And I actually think that some SMEs in my surveys are now just waking up to the fact that this is not going to be something which is going to recover. And therefore, they're taking the steps that you've outlined there to begin to lay a more measured exit process rather than just collapsing in a heap. And of course, the point is that the longer you leave it, the more the contagion spreads, because every creditor is a debitor and every debitor is another creditor. So effectively, it goes on and on and creates a web of mistrust potentially, or a web of difficulty in terms of cash flow. So the longer this whole process is left to fester, by just changing the rules for a bit longer, the worse I think it gets. So, look, I think this is a really big deal, which is why I have to say that I still am rather negative with regard to the economy, not just the next 6 months or 12 months, but the next 2 or 3 years.
Definitely, now, Martin. Mm. Just before we go on to the next subject there, is, look, now wrap your head around this, right? Wrap your head around this. And that's the fact that, as I said, the SMEs, a lot of SMEs that should have closed their doors, months ago, 6 months ago, they didn't. Why didn't they do that? As I said, because of this moratorium on being liquidated, this moratorium on bankruptcies and the like, right? So it was an opportunity. It was a time where they could sell the inventory. Now, if you know you're going to go bust and you owe somebody $10,000. But you hold on and you sell off more of your inventory and you cash up, you're getting money from selling your inventory here and you're also getting money from the government. Well, guess what? That money is going into a separate account that's handled by the missus or handled by the partner or by the kid or whatever, or your pet dog or cat, whatever it may be, right? So I'm not giving anybody any advice or how to dissolve a business. So that's what's been happening, Martin. So then when, as you said, so if you're going to go bust owing your creditors $10,000, $50,000, $100,000, well, you think to yourself, well, there's a moratorium on this. Well, what's the difference between going bust with $50,000 or going bust with $100,000? You still go bust. You're still going to owe your creditors, whether they get 50 cents in the dollar, 30 cents in the dollar, 10 cents in the dollar. At the end of the day, you're gone. You're kaput. The business is gone. That's on the business sector, right? Mm. Now, you've got a handle on that, right? So now we're going to go into the real estate arena, into the arena where again, there's been this mortgage holidays for 6 months or so, and there's an extension on with some with mortgage holidays, and they're taking advantage of it. They're buying new cars. People are doing all sorts of silly things with our money other than paying down debt. Because, again, Martin, it's this whole mental think or this whole philosophy or mindset. Hey, the bank's going to come in and take the house anyway and the investment properties. So why would I want to – so this is where I feel that the listing numbers aren't coming on as quickly as what I would have expected them to, and they're not coming on, and they may not come in on, or anything could happen, but they haven't been coming on as quickly as what I thought they were going to come on as, and this is my thinking. That is because if the bank's going to take your house, if the bank's going to take your principal place of residence, which they're a bit reluctant to anyway, to take proceedings on that, but if you're going to falter on your principal place of residence because you've got a commercial loan attached to the property, because you've got credit cards attached to the property, because you've got car leases attached to the property and so on, you're going to lose it anyway, right? But because there are these moratoriums and there's this interest holiday periods that the banks have issued, guess what, Martin? You're effectively living in a property free of charge. So it's the proceedings to kick somebody out of a home, or the proceedings to liquidate somebody or to bankrupt somebody in order to take possession of the investment properties is a long process. The courts aren't moving any faster because of COVID. They've slowed, everything has slowed down. So all these transactions, all that's happened is they're just moving forward, but they're moving forward in a slow motion process. And more so because of that, what I've spoken with people about, I've said, look, it would be smart for you to sell your property now that you're in trouble rather than later when you've got, you know, another 10, 15, 20 drop in your neighborhood, and then you're going to get a lot less. But when I talk to people over and over again, it comes back to, hey, if the bank's going to kick me out, well, let them kick me out. I might as well stay here rent free. That's another side of the coin that the mainstream don't discuss. But that's what's happening out there as well, Martin. And people are taking advantage of what's at play, the slow legal process, how the whole banking legal process, accounting process, how it's really slowed down. But this is my big but. The people that have been forgotten and the ones that I feel are going to be dropping a lot of properties on the market for sale are the retirees, because they do not have a social media voice. Effectively, they own the houses outright. They're downsizing for retirement. The bank dividends aren't paying them as much as they were. And you can't run a household on $30,000. You know, you need $65,000, $75,000 for a couple to live comfortably post retirement. That's what the gurus say. So when your income they've been getting has gone down to $25,000-$30,000, and they've got major renovations, major repairs to happen on these big homes in many suburbs, established suburbs, well, you've got problems. And I feel that's going to increase the number of listings on market, and that's going to push the prices down, as well as your overseas investors, which they're going through their own issues as well.
Well, I agree. Downtrading is always, as I said, one of the most critical things to understand, because there are way more people wanting to sell than people able to buy those properties. And if you look in the US post the global financial crisis, there are still people in their properties 5, 6, 7, 8 years after the global financial crisis, because the processes of basically foreclosure and getting people out took real slow time. And in fact, the banks didn't pursue many people because it wasn't worth it economically. It wasn't worth it either, because they had so many properties they didn't know what to do with. So this will be a very slow grind rather than something which sort of spikes and then falls away. I think those factors need to be put on the table, which is why I keep saying this is not a 6 month property thing. This is a 2 to 3 to 4 year property thing that we're seeing, with property prices continuing to slide, simply because of the fact that supply and demand equilibrium are completely out of order. And we're going to have more people needing to sell, wanting to sell. And of course, the banks are going to be quietly pushing people to put their property on the market rather than actually foreclosing, because the banks know that the foreclosure process takes forever, is very costly, and they end up with less. Whereas if they can persuade somebody who's in some financial difficulty to take the initiative and proactively sell the property, they have a better chance to get a greater return for that investment. So that's why the conversation now, and I spoke on Radio Illawarra today about this whole idea of the debt restructuring and all the things that people need to think about, right? The banks are going to be quite tough, particularly on property investors, to try and encourage them to sell their properties. And you add that to your down traders and everything else, and that's why I think the property is going to be where it is. Now, before we close, you just wanted, I think, to talk about a couple of specific examples.
Yeah, well, look, our followers like the down to earth examples. We're looking at 31 Margaret Street at Roseville. It went to auction last week. It got passed in. One of my associates tells me I wasn't there at the auction. I was at another auction at that time, and it got passed in at the guide, which was around 2.2 to 2.3, and now it's come on live. Advertised live under a private treaty campaign, and the guide is $2,350,000. Now it's a big block of land, you know, house needs a bit of work. It's a decent sized parcel of land there in that area. But the interesting thing, Martin, is that the property was bought on the 31st of January 2018, and it was bought for $2,750,000. So there are your pools, and the top end, when you start translating, because it's easy to talk about percentages. We talk about 5% drops, 10% drops, but it's when you start talking to people about real numbers, particularly in the North Shore, in the northern districts and the eastern suburbs as well. Some of the top end market in all over Sydney in the top end. When you start talking about you could say, it's only had a 10% drop or a 15% drop, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. But when you start translating it, we're talking about 400,000 drops thus far, and it has, and people are still not putting their hand up, even at 2.2 at the auction. How much further will it go? What's it really worth? And just around the corner, I'm following other sales just around the corner where I've seen drops in properties that were bought 1 or 2 years prior, in 16, 17. And the transaction values or what they get passed in at auction and then they go on a private treaty campaign, the differences are also, in anywhere between $300,000 and $400,000 apart. So that's something that starts bringing should bring people's thoughts down to earth as to what's happening out there. And when you start talking about rises, and when Joy in the AFA in that particular article, he talks about how properties stabilized in Canada and in America and all this on at the beginning of the article, and at the end of the article he says, and they've got issues and there's the election issues and this other issue and that, and therefore it's going to be poor. I mean, make up your bloody mind. You're either Arthur or Martha, one or the other, mate.
It's called hedging your bets.
Yeah, exactly. I follow some people with Canada with regard to Canada, Canadian property, and they post stuff there, and it's absolutely eye-watering. The drops we're talking about, anywhere between 1 and 2 million on purchases from 2 and 3 years ago.
Yeah, and look, the point is, Edwin, that the more that you research what's happened, real price movements, we're seeing again and again the falls from the heights of 2018 in and around Sydney, right? And all of this talk about there was a big rebound in 2020, well, I don't see it in any of the data in most places. And there will be a few exceptions. There'll be the odd one that goes well above reserve, etc. That always is the case. But, the meat and potato properties that are there are definitely underwater relative to their last transaction if they were bought in the last 2 or 3 years. And, of course, we just have to underscore stamp duty, of course, is a huge slug that was also paid when they bought the thing. So they've got that to account as well as just the capital loss.
That's right. It's just, like I said, so like you talk about meat and potatoes, I talk about nachos and guacamole, but the same stuff, isn't it? It's a bit of protein here and there. So we just got to take it on board, and people have just got to be, I say to people, just slow down, slow down, take a breath, and research.
Yeah, I think that's the point, Edwin. And I often say, be cautious, be careful now. Don't jump into things. Don't buy the spruiking. Do the research. Find that local information. If you're in New South Wales, the Value General's site is actually very good, and you can actually look down to a individual location or an individual postcode area and see the latest transactions. That is by far the best information source in terms of what's really going on. It's 2 months delayed because that's, of course, the processing time it takes to get the transaction completed. But don't believe necessarily the stuff elsewhere, because there is selective information being presented. It's being presented with a particular agenda, but I think, Edwin, both you and I agree that the true story is much closer to what we've been discussing here today.
No, that's right, Martin. So, we'll leave our viewers with that, and hopefully they'll enjoy it. And if they're on Tinder, just wear a bloody mask. You know, just follow the signs, what they say in Canada. It's okay. Casual sex is okay as long as you wear a mask.
Yeah, well, it's worth remembering next time in Canada.
And if you're going to buy an off-the-plan apartment, make sure it's from a spruiker that's wearing a mask.
Well, everyone, thanks for your time today. And, you know, next week you'll have to actually think of another hairstyle to be able to actually keep the audience guessing.
Yeah, look, bloody Tarek Siegel Brookert, seriously. It's... Yeah, you know, I was really aiming for that. Now I'm going to have to go the other way and cut my hair or something.
Yeah, well, you know, I just put on my sunglasses of gloom, right? As I discuss, right? Because I think that actually helps to see the property market in a whole new light.
Well, I wouldn't call them sunglasses of doom. I'd be calling them like shades to keep out all that bling that you get from the AFR and the domain articles. Yeah, all that lighting, shining light that just comes out at you and just makes you want to go out there and buy at an auction. You know, knock on somebody's door and say, "Listen, here's a couple of mil. You know, take off. I'm moving in."
Yep, wear your sunglasses, folks. It'll help you to see the property for what it is. Thanks, Edwin. Talk to you soon. Take care.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
Goodbye.